94.3 The Shark, everything that rocks. We are talking to our friend, licensed clinical social worker, Tracy Cardello. Through this past year, it started out with Tracy coming on to help us navigate through the pandemic and what our feelings were. And now it's going to be 1 year since we started all of this. And I know for some, a lot has changed. For some, nothing has changed. However, we are now 1 year into a myriad of mental health issues. And as a mental health professional, what are you seeing the most change with in people? Like, how has this all affected them 1 year later now?
I think the biggest problem has been fear. You know, everybody is suffering from this big pervasive fear that we're constantly reminded of hour after hour, day after day. This is going on for a year now, and it shows no end in sight. And so people are feeling fatigued and they're afraid and they don't know really where to turn and how to resolve that fear.
As a mental health professional, how do you see this playing out if the fear continues throughout this year?
You know, it's hard to say because you've got medical professionals and politicians that are creating policy that really keep people's fear in place. And so even when they're told, like, it's okay, you're safe now, that takes a little while to resolve. People are going to need some help to overcome that, and they're going to need mental health professionals, and they're going to need support from friends and family, and it's not going to be an easy road, I don't think.
So the biggest part of this pandemic has been the fear of dying. You know, a lot of people are afraid of their loved ones, their elderly, but a lot of people are afraid of their own, for their own lives. And we've talked in the past about the difference between fear and phobia.
Right.
A rational fear versus irrational fear. Is it getting harder to help people differentiate that?
I think it is. I think it's harder and harder to reality test, right? And the things that used to seem ridiculous to us all of a sudden now are very, very real. And yeah, people are definitely afraid of losing their family, spreading disease, you know, of being the reason that someone else dies. This has definitely reached the level of phobia.
As a mental health professional, is this like your worst nightmare when phobia becomes reality for most?
It's definitely tough. It's tough to watch, right? Because there's not a lot that you can do to help people resolve this, right? You're, you know, sort of on the one hand trying to help people resolve these fears, but the messages that they're getting from, you know, lots of external sources is that their fear is rational and reasonable, and they need to sort of live in alignment with that in order to keep themselves safe.
So since I was young, I was unfortunate in the fact that I have lost some very good friends of mine at ages where you just wouldn't conceive people losing their lives and for different reasons. And I know that it's affected me. I know that it shaped the way I've thought about things. So I understand where the phobias come in. But especially after a loss, how do you navigate out of a phobia into a fear so that, let's just say, like my best friend had, you know, got into an accident, where you're not going to think that every time a loved one gets in a car that that's going to happen to them?
Well, and that's a big problem, right? Because we have a tendency, the human brain is sort of set up in such a way that we remember and hold on to and use negative information way more than we do positive information. So when something bad happens, we are always on alert and looking for evidence to support our belief that bad things happen. Right.
Is there something in our DNA that makes us gravitate towards the bad? Like, we're always talking about being more positive. Why is it that human nature pushes us towards the negative?
Well, I mean, we evolved in such a way, right, that in order to continue the evolution of the species, we needed to know what was dangerous and what we needed to be afraid of. And so, yeah, part of that is probably built in. I mean, that's a little beyond my scope. But definitely built into the human body is this need to survive. And so it's important to remember when things are dangerous or scary or painful, because we try to avoid that. We try to never do that again.
So we are essentially all animals.
Totally.
And that's animal instinct that you just described at its most base form.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So as we continue to try to get out of our own way, what are some of the techniques that you have used pre-pandemic? Because I understand that now it's a little bit much, but we still need to implement these things even in this world. What are some of the techniques that you've used and worked with clients on to help them get out of phobia and back into healthy fear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there are some techniques. And I just want to sort of double back to that, because it's important that we have this fear because it helps us survive. Right. And so there's something very adaptive about this. The problem is that right now in modern life, we're not running from one particular thing.
Yeah.
And then when that resolves, we feel better and we can go back into a state of relaxation. We're constantly in a state of elevated fight or flight. Right. And it's not because we're running from something. It's because of something inside us. And so that feels like a very different situation. So like that's not exactly where we come from, evolutionarily speaking. So one of the things that we try to do with some of the newer techniques is to calm down the nervous system so that your body doesn't stay in fight or flight all the time, and so that you can, you know, help your body sort of eliminate some of those chemicals that are at a heightened elevation when you're afraid of something.
Is there some symptoms, are there some indicators to know when your nervous system is calm?
Well, yeah, for one thing, you'll feel calmer, right? You'll notice that your mind is racing less. You'll notice that your heartbeat is not racing. Your palms are not sweaty. So all of the things that you would feel when you're under tremendous stress should be eliminated when you're feeling calmer, right? Which is not to say that your chemicals are necessarily going to be lower, because that's something that you'd have to have measured, you know, through blood work and stuff.
But is there a way to manage or preventatively getting to that point again, like knowing that, maybe being more aware of your heart racing to know when it's time to jump off the train and not get so worked up? And are there ways to manage keeping from rising to that level?
Well, yeah, like daily meditation is a really good practice. So is yoga, right? And the reason for that is kind of the same reason that people don't like doing it, because they always think they're doing it wrong.
I just had my third energy drink.
That's probably not very good for your nervous system either, right? So meditating on a regular basis, right? Noticing when your body is in a state of calm or in a state of relaxation. Breathing techniques that really help. Yoga, stretching, regular exercise, staying connected to nature. Those are all things that are going to help your body stay calm.
So self-help has always been, I mean, it's a market, but it's always been one of the more difficult things because, again, I feel like we tend to dive into the negative, but why are these things so hard? Like, why are we hardwired to ignore what's best for us?
Well, sometimes what's best for us feels difficult because I think it's easier for us to distract, right? Mm-hmm. So we put on the TV to forget what's going on, or turn to substances, or turn to shopping addiction or gambling or whatever, you know, in order to forget or distract ourselves from some of the more painful things in our lives rather than face them head on. The problem is that when you don't face things head on, they just get worse.